Hey everyone, welcome back for another deep dive.
Always a pleasure.
Today we're diving into an academic lecture on the book of Ezekiel.
Oh yeah.
Chapter 34.
Fascinating stuff.
It is. And specifically we're looking at the sheep and shepherd metaphor.
Right.
That runs throughout.
A classic.
Yeah. And you know, you've given us some really interesting material here to kind of break down.
I hope so.
It's structured around three main messages and a few supplementary ones, all kind of coming back to this sheep and shepherd idea.
Yeah, it's a really rich image to work with.
It is. And it got me thinking, have you ever considered how ancient political leadership
Oh, absolutely.
Was intertwined with like religious beliefs?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, in the ancient world, you can't really separate those two spheres.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The kings were often seen as divinely appointed.
Right.
And their authority was rooted in their relationship with the gods.
And Ezekiel 34 gives us just such a front row seat to that whole dynamic.
Yeah, it's like a case study in how those ideas played out in ancient Israel.
So let's jump right into the first main point that the lecture lays out, the shepherd king's failure.
Okay.
And it starts with a pretty scathing critique of the last kings of Judah.
Yeah, they don't come off looking too good.
No, it's like they're being called out for being terrible shepherds to their people, like the sheep.
Right. And it's not just Ezekiel doing the calling out.
Oh.
The lecture connects it back to the prophet Jeremiah, chapter 23.
Okay.
Both prophets are accusing these kings of basically putting their own interests ahead of the well-being of the people.
So not just like bad leadership, but like...
Right. It's not just incompetence. It's this sense of selfishness and neglect.
Yeah. And it's not even just a general accusation.
No, they get into specifics.
Yeah. Like eating the curds and taking the wool.
Exactly. Like real shepherding imagery.
But what's interesting is that the lecture points out that this isn't just about bad shepherding practices.
Right. It's deeper than that.
It's about the kings enriching themselves at the expense of their people.
Yeah, taking the curds, the wool, those are all symbols of how they were extracting resources from the very people who relied on them.
So like taking advantage of their position.
Exactly. Abusing their power for personal gain.
That's a really good point. And the lecture makes it clear that these accusations aren't meant to be taken literally.
Oh, definitely not. By the time Ezekiel is writing, those kings are long gone.
Right. So it's not about punishing them or anything.
It's more about using their example to really drive home the consequences of bad leadership.
Like a cautionary tale.
Exactly. A warning for future generations.
Right. And they use such vivid imagery.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's this part that talks about the day of clouds and thick darkness.
It's pretty ominous.
Yeah. It sounds terrifying.
And it's meant to be, it's a reference to the day of the Lord.
Oh.
And the fall of Jerusalem,
right,
which was a huge turning point for the people of Judah.
Yeah, it's like everything fell apart.
Exactly. It's like saying, look, the old way clearly didn't work. Things have fallen apart. So now God is stepping in to take charge.
But wait, God's always in charge, isn't he?
Well, yeah. But what's interesting here is that the lecture points out the double meaning of shepherd in the Old Testament.
Oh, okay.
On one hand, it refers to human kings, like those who failed so miserably.
Right.
But on the other hand, it's also a metaphor for God himself.
Oh, so it's setting up this contrast.
Exactly. On one side, you have the neglectful, selfish kings symbolized by all the things they didn't do for their sheep.
Right.
And on the other side, you have God who promises to be the true shepherd, the one who provides security, guidance, and abundance.
Yeah, so the failings of the human kings really highlight what God is supposed to be doing for his people.
Exactly. The lecture even uses the term mirror image.
Oh, interesting.
To describe how Ezekiel 34.4 lists all the ways the kings failed their flock.
Right.
And then Ezekiel 34.16 gives us a point-by-point reversal of those failures.
Oh, wow. So it's really intentional.
Yeah. It's like God is saying, this is how it's supposed to be. I'm the shepherd who truly cares for my sheep.
And then they go on to describe the restored land.
Oh, yeah.
With all this imagery.
Beautiful.
Mountains of Israel. Good pasture-rich grazing land.
It's this picture of peace and prosperity, a total turnaround from the desolation of exile.
I can only imagine what it must have felt like for the people hearing these words.
You know, oh, yeah.
Clinging to this hope in the midst of so much hardship.
It's a powerful message of hope, for sure.
It is, but the lecture doesn't stop there.
Nope.
It shifts focus from the past kings to a problem within the exile community itself.
Right. This is where we get into the second main message, judgment within the exile.
Right. The fast sheep and lean sheep.
Exactly.
So it's not just the kings messing up.
Yeah.
It's also about this social exploitation happening even among those who were exiled together.
Yeah. Even after everything that happened, people were still trying to take advantage of each other.
I mean, you'd think they would have learned their lesson.
You'd think so, right? But yeah. The lecture highlights how even in this difficult situation, there were people hoarding resources, pushing the weaker members of the community to the margins.
So like the same patterns of behavior.
Exactly. They were still trying to get ahead, even if it meant stepping on others to do it.
But isn't that ironic? They're all outsiders now, you know?
Totally.
Exiles from their homeland.
It's like they haven't learned anything from the experience.
Yeah, what was the point of all that suffering if they hadn't changed at all?
It does seem like a missed opportunity.
And the lecture makes it clear that God sees this and he's not pleased.
Oh no, the actions of those fat sheep are directly condemned.
Like what kind of actions?
Pushing the weak out, muddying the water. It's a reminder that true leadership is about service and compassion.
Right, not just self-interest.
Exactly.
So what happens to these fat sheep? Are they punished?
Well, the lecture doesn't spell out a specific punishment.
Right.
It's more like they exclude themselves from God's flock by their actions.
So they're kind of choosing their own fate.
Yeah, they've chosen self-interest over unity and compassion.
Right.
And that puts them at odds with God's vision for his people.
So it's less about God punishing them and more about them separating themselves.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes sense. And this leads us to the third main point.
The promise of a new shepherd.
Okay, so now we're shifting from the failures of the past to
hope for the future.
Right, and it's not just about God directly intervening, but also about a restored monarchy, right?
Right, but there's a twist.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Tell me more.
The lecture emphasizes this idea of one shepherd uniting the divided kingdoms of Israel and Judah.
Oh, so it's not just about going back to the way things were.
No, it's a vision of unity and wholeness that goes beyond what existed before the exile.
That's interesting. I'm curious about who this chosen leader will be.
Well, the lecture mentions my servant David.
But didn't the Davidic kings kind of mess things up in the first place?
That's where the lecture draws a crucial distinction.
Okay.
This servant David isn't just any descendant of King David.
Right.
It's someone who embodies the ideals of Davidic kingship, justice, righteousness, and obedience to God.
So it's not just about bloodline, it's about character.
Exactly. This future king learns from the mistakes of the past and rules in alignment with God's will.
So like a perfect ruler.
Well, it's certainly a high standard.
Yeah.
But the point is that this future king is meant to be a model of what leadership should look like.
Someone who actually cares about the people.
Exactly. Someone who prioritizes the well-being of the people over personal gain.
Okay, so how does the lecture explain this idea of a perfect ruler?
They use the concept of a vassal king.
A what?
A vassal king.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that term.
So in ancient Near Eastern politics, a vassal king was a ruler who owed allegiance to a more powerful overlord.
So like a king who answers to a higher authority.
Exactly. And in this case, God is the ultimate authority.
So this future king derives their power from God.
Right, and is accountable to God for how to use it.
So it's like they're God's representative on earth.
Precisely, ruling on God's behalf and carrying out God's will.
That's fascinating. It takes this ancient political idea and applies it to this theological concept.
Right. It's connecting those two spheres of political and religious authority.
And I think that's something that you, as our listener specifically, wanted us to explore.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, this idea of how ancient political leadership was intertwined with religious beliefs.
It's not just some abstract theological debate.
Right. It has real-world implications.
For how leadership and power are exercised.
Exactly. And I think it speaks to the enduring relevance of Ezekiel 34.
I agree.
You know, even though it's written centuries ago, it's still grappling with these fundamental questions about the nature of leadership.
Totally.
The relationship between the ruler and the ruled.
And the importance of accountability.
Yeah. And the lecture actually draws a parallel with 2 Samuel 5.12.
Oh, interesting. What does it say?
Which states that David's reign was meant to be for the sake of God's people.
Ah, so it's reinforcing that idea that true kingship is about service.
Right, not self-aggrandizement.
It makes you wonder how differently things might have turned out if those last kings of Judah had taken that lesson to heart.
Right, but maybe this new Davidic king will finally get it right.
We can hope.
So we've got God as the ultimate shepherd, a new Davidic king as his representative on earth, and this promise of unity and restoration.
It's a pretty compelling vision.
But what does that actually look like in practice?
Right. How does this all translate into a tangible reality for the people?
That's where the supplementary messages in Ezekiel 34 come in.
Okay, fill me in.
They flesh out the details of this restored covenant between God and his people.
Interesting.
They paint this picture of what life will be like in this new era.
Okay, I'm listening.
And it's quite a vivid picture.
Well, we've got to dive into that then.
Oh, yeah. But we're going to have to wait until after.
Hold on a second. We've got plenty of time to explore that. I think you'll find it quite fascinating.
All right. All right. You've piqued my curiosity. Tell me more about this covenant of peace and security.
Okay. So
what makes it so special?
This covenant of peace and security is found in Ezekiel 34.25-30.
Okay.
And it's like stepping into a world transformed
Okay.
And the lecture really emphasizes this word secure.
Okay.
It appears over and over in this passage.
Okay.
And it speaks to the deep anxieties of exile.
Right.
That constant fear and uncertainty the people were living with.
Yeah, I can only imagine how heavy that must have felt.
Oh, absolutely.
To be uprooted from your homeland, living in a foreign land, surrounded by uncertainty.
To yearn for a place where you could finally feel safe, at peace.
And that's precisely what this covenant promises.
Yes, a future where they can finally let go of those anxieties and truly flourish.
Okay, but what does that look like? How does this covenant actually create that sense of security?
Well, the lecture paints this incredibly vivid picture of the restored land.
Okay, I like vivid. Give it to me.
Imagine wild animals banish showers of blessing, fruitful trees everywhere.
That's idyllic.
It even talks about an end to plunder and insults.
It sounds amazing.
It's like this paradise regained a place where they can rebuild their lives without fear of attack or oppression.
But how does this connect back to the idea of the shepherd?
Well, remember that a good shepherd protects their flock from danger.
Right.
That's their primary responsibility.
Yeah.
And in this covenant, God is essentially saying, I will be the shepherd who protects you. I will create a world where you are safe from all harm.
So it's not just about physical safety. It's about emotional and spiritual security as well.
Exactly. It's about knowing that you are cared for, protected, and guided by a loving shepherd.
And what's really interesting is that the lecture draws this fascinating parallel to Leviticus 26.
Oh, tell me more.
Specifically, the idea of a second Exodus.
Oh, wow.
Just as God delivered his people from slavery in Egypt, he's now promising to deliver them from exile in Babylon.
It's like a new beginning.
Yeah, a chance to rebuild their lives and their relationship with God in a land where they can truly flourish.
I never thought about it that way.
It's like this whole new chapter unfolding.
Yeah.
Building upon the stories and promises of the past.
It's not just about going home.
Right.
It's about this spiritual and emotional renewal as well.
It's a restoration on every level.
Physically, emotionally, and spiritually.
They're not just returning to a place. They're being restored to a right relationship with God.
And with each other.
And that's all framed within the context of this renewed covenant.
Hmm.
That key phrase, I, the Lord, will be their God.
It's like the foundation of their whole identity as a people.
Exactly. And here in Ezekiel 34:30, we get the other half of that covenant formula.
What's that?
They, the house of Israel, are my people.
It's a beautiful reciprocal commitment.
Yeah, a bond of belonging and love.
That defines their relationship.
Okay, but is it really that simple? Just a declaration and everything is fixed?
Well, not exactly. There's a lot of work involved in rebuilding trust and restoring broken relationships.
Right.
But this covenant serves as the foundation, the bedrock upon which everything else is built.
It's like putting all the pieces back together after they've been shattered.
Yeah.
There's this sense of wholeness and harmony being restored.
Both within the community and between the people and their God.
It's a powerful image. But doesn't it kind of feel like we've reached the end of the story? Like everything is tied up neatly with a bow?
Not so fast.
Oh, there are more.
The lecture takes us one step further.
Okay, I'm listening.
Connecting these ideas in Ezekiel 34 to something even bigger.
Okay, now you've really got my attention. What could be bigger than this whole epic saga of exile, restoration, and covenant?
The lecture connects it all to the ministry of Jesus in the New Testament.
Hold on, are you saying that Ezekiel 34 is some kind of prophecy about Jesus?
Not explicitly, no.
Okay.
But the lecture points out some undeniable parallels.
Like what?
Think about Jesus as the good shepherd in John 10.
Okay, yeah.
His mission to seek and save the lost in Luke 19:10.
Okay.
The separation of sheep and goats in Matthew 25.
All right.
Even the parable of the lost sheep in Matthew 18 and Luke 15.
I see where you're going with this.
All of these have roots in Ezekiel 34.
It's like this ancient text is laying the groundwork for how people will understand Jesus centuries later.
Exactly.
That's incredible. I mean, it makes you realize that these ancient stories aren't just about the past.
Right.
They're still speaking to us today.
Shaping our understanding of faith, leadership, even the human condition.
It's like this continuous thread weaving its way through history.
And that's what makes this deep dive so compelling.
Absolutely.
We're not just studying ancient history. We're exploring ideas that have shaped our understanding of faith, leadership, and the human condition for centuries.
But let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Right.
There's still one more piece of the puzzle to unpack the enduring covenant.
Ah, yes, that's the glue that holds it all together.
This idea that ties everything together, this enduring covenant between God and his people.
What makes it so enduring? What sets it apart?
Well, I think to understand that we need to take a closer look at Ezekiel 34:31.
Okay.
It's like this concise summary of the entire chapter, bringing together the metaphorical and literal aspects of the covenant.
So it highlights both the imagery of the shepherd and sheep.
Right.
And the plain language of God's relationship with his people.
It's almost like a culmination of everything we've been talking about.
Yeah.
The failures of the past, a hope for the future, and this enduring promise of God's love and faithfulness.
It's a powerful image.
But what makes it so special? Why does this covenant stand the test of time?
That's a great question.
I think
what strikes me about Ezekiel 34.31 is how it so perfectly captures both sides of the relationship.
Okay.
You know, God declares, I am your God.
Right.
And then we get that beautiful affirmation, you are my sheep, the sheep of my pasture.
It's like this mutual recognition.
Right. This acknowledgement of belonging and connection.
Yeah. It's not just a contract.
No.
It's a statement of identity and love.
Exactly. And I think that's the heart of what makes this covenant so enduring.
Okay.
It's rooted in God's unwavering love for his people.
Mm.
It's not dependent on their actions or their faithfulness.
Unconditional.
Exactly. It's a promise that transcends their failures and shortcomings.
It's a reminder that no matter what they do, no matter how far they stray, God will always welcome them back.
It's a powerful message of hope and resilience.
And it resonates far beyond the historical context of ancient Israel.
Oh, absolutely. I think it speaks to a deep longing within all of us.
That desire for connection and belonging.
And unconditional love.
And it reminds us that even when we feel lost and alone, there's always a path back home.
Always.
Wow, that's really beautiful. So we journeyed through Ezekiel 34. We've seen the failings of leaders, the promise of a new shepherd, the enduring covenant between God and his people, and even glimpsed how these themes connect to the New Testament.
We've covered a lot of ground.
We have. We've unpacked a lot of powerful ideas here.
We certainly have.
And considering all these connections between Ezekiel 34 and the New Testament, how does this change your understanding of Jesus' ministry and mission?
That's a great question for our listeners to ponder.
Yeah, think about how these ancient words still speak to us today.
How they challenge us to reimagine what leadership looks like, what it means to belong to a community, and what truly matters in life.
And don't let the conversation end here.
Right.
Dive deep into Ezekiel 34, maybe even explore John 10, where Jesus describes himself as the Good Shepherd.
See what new insights you uncover.
Go ahead. Explore, discover, and let these ancient words inspire you. Until next time.
Okay, so this covenant of peace and security, it's found in Ezekiel 34.25-30.
Okay.
And it's like stepping into a world transformed.
Okay, so you said the lecture emphasized the word secure.
Right, secure. It pops up again and again in this passage.
And you're saying it speaks to the anxieties of exile.
Exactly, that constant fear and uncertainty.
Yeah, I can only imagine, you know, being uprooted from your homeland.
Living in a foreign land.
Surrounded by people you don't know.
Not knowing what the future holds.
And just this deep yearning for a place where you could finally feel safe.
At peace.
Yeah.
And that's precisely what this covenant promises.
Okay, so a future free from anxiety.
A future where they can truly flourish.
I like it. But how does it actually work? Like, how does this covenant create that sense of security?
Well, the lecture describes the restored land.
Okay.
And it uses some really vivid imagery.
I'm all about vivid imagery. Paint me a picture.
Okay, so imagine wild animals, banished showers of blessing, fruitful trees everywhere.
Sounds pretty idyllic.
It even talks about an end to plunder and insults.
So no more fear of attack or oppression.
Exactly. It's like this paradise regained a place where they can finally rebuild their lives.
Okay, I'm seeing it, but I'm a little fuzzy on how this connects back to the shepherd idea.
Ah, well, remember, a good shepherd protects their flock.
Right, that's like their main job.
Exactly, and in this covenant, God is basically saying, I will be the shepherd who protects you. I will create a world where you are safe from all harm.
So it's more than just physical safety.
Right, it's about emotional and spiritual security as well.
Knowing that you're cared for.
Protected, guided.
By a loving shepherd.
Exactly.
You know what's interesting?
What's that?
The lecture draws a parallel to Leviticus 26.
Oh, really?
Specifically that idea of a second exodus.
I see it.
Just as God delivered his people from slavery in Egypt, he's now promising to deliver them from exile in Babylon.
A new beginning.
Yeah, a chance to rebuild their lives and their relationship with God in a land where they can truly flourish.
Wow, I never thought about it that way.
It's like this whole new chapter unfolding, building on the stories and promises of the past.
It's not just about going home.
Right.
It's about this spiritual and emotional renewal as well.
It's a restoration on every level.
Physically, emotionally, and spiritually.
Not just returning to a place, but being restored to a right relationship with God.
And with each other.
Yeah, and it's all framed within this idea of a renewed covenant.
That key phrase, I, the Lord, will be their God.
Yeah, it's like the foundation of their whole identity as a people.
Exactly, and then in Ezekiel 34.30, we get the other half of that covenant formula.
Oh, right. The house of Israel are my people.
Such a beautiful reciprocal commitment.
It is a real bond of belonging and love that defines their relationship.
So much more than just a contract.
Right. Okay. But is it really that simple? Like a declaration is made and suddenly everything is fixed?
Well, not exactly. You know, there's still a lot of work involved in rebuilding trust.
Of course.
Restoring broken relationships.
Right. It's not going to happen overnight.
But this covenant serves as the foundation, the bedrock upon which everything else is built.
So it's like putting all the pieces back together after they've been shattered.
Exactly. Restoring that sense of wholeness and harmony, both within the community and between the people and their God.
That's a powerful image, but it does feel kind of like we've reached the end of the story, like everything is tied up neatly with a bow.
Not so fast.
Oh, there's more.
The lecture takes us one step further, connecting these ideas in Ezekiel 34 to something even bigger.
Okay, now you've really got my attention. What could be bigger than this whole saga of exile and restoration and covenant?
The lecture connects it all to the ministry of Jesus in the New Testament.
Wait, hold on. Are you saying that Ezekiel 34 is some kind of prophecy about Jesus?
Not explicitly, no.
Okay.
But the lecture does point out some undeniable parallels.
Okay, such as?
Well, think about Jesus as the Good Shepherd in John 10.
Okay, yeah, I see that.
His mission to seek and save the lost in Luke 19.10.
Okay, yeah.
The separation of sheep and goats in Matthew 25.
Uh-huh.
Even the parable of the lost sheep in Matthew 18 and Luke 15.
Okay, I'm starting to see the connections.
All of these have roots in Ezekiel 34.
So it's like this ancient text is laying the groundwork for how people will understand Jesus centuries later.
Exactly.
That's incredible. It makes you realize that these ancient stories aren't just about the past.
They're still speaking to us today.
Yeah. Shaping our understanding of faith,
leadership,
even the human condition.
It's this continuous thread weaving its way through history.
And that's what makes this deep dive so compelling.
We're not just studying ancient history, we're exploring ideas that have shaped our understanding of faith, leadership, and the human condition for centuries.
Okay, but before we get too carried away,
right,
there's still one more piece of the puzzle to unpack.
The enduring covenant.
The glue that holds it all together, this idea that ties everything together, this enduring covenant between God and his people.
What makes it so enduring? What sets it apart?
Well, to understand that, I think we need to take a closer look at Ezekiel 34.31.
Okay.
It's like this concise summary of the entire chapter. You know,
bring together the metaphorical and literal aspects of the covenant.
Exactly. It highlights both the imagery of the shepherd and sheep.
And the plain language of God's relationship with his people.
So it's like a culmination of everything we've been talking about, the failures of the past, the hope for the future.
And this enduring promise of God's love and faithfulness.
It's a powerful image, but what makes it so special? Why does this covenant stand the test of time?
What strikes me is how it so perfectly captures both sides of the relationship. You know, God declares, I am your God.
Yeah.
And then that affirmation comes back, you are my sheep, the sheep of my pasture.
It's like they're really recognizing each other.
It is.
Yeah, acknowledging that they belong together.
It's not just a contract you sign.
No, it's so much deeper than that.
A statement of identity of love.
That's a beautiful way to put it.
And that's the heart of it. I think that's what makes this covenant so enduring.
Okay.
It's rooted in God's unwavering love.
His love for his people.
Right. And it's not dependent on them.
It doesn't matter what they do.
It's not about their actions or their faithfulness.
It's unconditional.
Exactly. A promise that goes beyond their failures and shortcomings.
They can mess up and it's still there.
Always there.
It's like a constant reassurance.
Yeah, that they're not alone.
That they're always connected to something bigger.
To God, to a loving shepherd.
No matter what challenges they face, they can always find their way back.
To that source of love and belonging.
It's powerful stuff. So we've journeyed through Ezekiel 34. We've seen the failings of leaders, the promise of a new shepherd, the enduring covenant, and even glimpsed how it connects to the New Testament.
It's been quite a journey.
We've covered a lot of ground, unpacked some really powerful ideas.
We certainly have.
Now, considering these connections between Ezekiel 34 and the New Testament, how does this change your understanding of Jesus's ministry and mission?
That's a great question. Something for our listeners to really think about.
Yeah, how do these ancient words speak to you today?
What resonates most strongly with you?
How do they challenge you to rethink leadership community? What really matters?
And don't let the conversation end here.
Right. Keep exploring.
Dive deeper into Ezekiel 34. Check out John 10, where Jesus calls himself the Good Shepherd.
See what other gems you can uncover.
There's always more to discover.
Absolutely. All right, everyone. Until next time, keep exploring and let these ancient words inspire you.